The days when colleges could leave it to students to find their own way are in the distant past. In retrospect, should that ever really have been the case? Hello, and welcome to The Key, Inside Higher Ed's News and Analysis Podcast. I'm Doug Letterman, Inside Higher Ed's editor and co-founder, and host of The Key. Thanks for listening today. This week's episode digs into one of the more substantial efforts of the last decade to redesign the student experience and, in many ways, the underlying higher ed business model, Guided Pathways. The idea is that institutions, particularly community colleges, need to be much more intentional about how they help students plan and actually navigate the path to their educational goals. Hundreds of two-year institutions have engaged in this work, and I'm joined today by two researchers who have helped develop this model and are rigorously assessing how it's working. Davis Jenkins is a senior research scholar, and Hannah Lahr is a senior research associate and director of applied learning at the Community College Research Center at Columbia University's Teachers College. In the conversation that follows, they'll talk about their recently published papers evaluating how Guided Pathways has spread, what iterations of the model work best, and what it takes to bring about this kind of sweeping, quote, whole college change at institutions that can be both tradition-bound and financially strapped. Before we begin, here's a word from CourseDog, whose sponsorship support has made this episode possible.
This episode of The Key is sponsored by CourseDog. The processes behind academic operations enable students to successfully access their education. Class and event scheduling, assessment, curriculum and catalog management all impact the student experience. Manage it all in one place with CourseDog's Academic Operations Platform, bi-directionally integrated with your SIS. Maximize your resources to meet students' needs. Visit CourseDog.com/IHE to learn more. CourseDog, higher ed's best friend.
Now on to today's discussion with Hannah Lahr and Davis Jenkins.
Davis and Hannah, welcome to The Key and thanks for being here.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Could you start by giving us a quick primer on what Guided Pathways are and what your research says about the state of the model?
So Guided Pathways is a whole college reform model designed to help community college students better explore, choose, plan, and complete programs that enable them to get a good job directly or transfer to a bachelor's program in a major, and to do so in a reasonable time and cost. In 2015, Tom Bailey, Shauna Jaggers, and I published a book called Redesigning America's Community Colleges, in which we address the question of why, despite a lot of effort by community colleges, especially since the early 2000s, to try to improve outcomes, we saw benefits for some students, but not moving of the needle overall. And our theory was that the efforts to date had been to try to improve the existing community college education model on the margin. But we argued that that model, which we called the cafeteria college, which had emerged in the 1960s as part of the great effort by the United States to expand access and succeeded wildly, that cafeteria model wasn't good at helping students sort of choose a direction and complete a program that would be aligned. So Guided Pathways, it's not a set of practices per se. It's a research-based framework for wholesale restructuring academic programs and student supports to have faculty and staff and administrators work across to try to redesign with four goals in mind. Number one, clarify the path to student end goals, which isn't clear in the cafeteria model, help students get on a path or into a program, help them stay on path and complete in a reasonable time, and then very importantly, make sure there's learning not just with individual courses, but across entire programs.
Hannah, could you tell us a little bit about sort of what the most recent studies that CCRC did say about the state of the model?
We did two evaluations. One was with the AACC Pathways Project, which included 30 colleges from 17 states that applied, went through a pretty rigorous application and interview process, and were accepted into this project. And then the other was funded by the National Science Foundation, and it included all 70 community colleges in Washington, Ohio, and Tennessee. And we looked at two main questions in these studies. One, what does whole college redesign within this Guided Pathways framework look like? And is it doable? And then the second question is the adoption of guided pathways associated with improvements in student outcomes. And what made these evaluations different is that we were looking at, again, this like whole college reform, which makes any sort of evaluation really tricky because you're not focused on kind of a discrete intervention that's focused on either like one part of the student experience or one group of like a smaller group of students. We were really interested in change across a college and looking at improvements, whether there were any improvements in student outcomes at scale. Like Davis mentioned, we theorized that to really make these improvements at scale, to really see changes in student outcomes, we needed to change the experience for all students across their experience from the time they're being recruited and enrolling through completion. We collected data on the adoption of practices using some institutional assessments that we developed that really focused on trying to understand which practices colleges were adopting and at what scale. So are these adopted at scale, meaning for at least, we defined it as being for at least 80% of students or affecting at least 80% of programs at a college, or was it at a, you know, a smaller scale than that? Then we used some metrics of student performance. We focused on one-year metrics, looking at college-level credit accumulation in the first term and in the first year, passing Gateway Math in the first year, persistence from fall to spring and fall to fall. So really focusing on these one-year outcomes that we have found through other research to be predictive of longer-term outcomes like completion. And we looked at whether there were any associations between the adoption of practices at scale and improvements in those one-year metrics.
And your research found?
We did find a positive relationship between the implementation at scale of what we considered to be, based on the research, a sort of a complementary set of central guided pathways practices, and in particular in credit momentum, which is accumulating a substantial number of college credits, not remedial credits, in the first year. A lot of people have done research suggesting that early momentum, as Hanna was saying, is predictive of longer term success, and it has especially high benefits for low income students, academically unprepared students. So both studies really supported this idea that you can't just scale one piece of the model. You have to scale a complementary set of practices because you want to affect students' journey, not just at the beginning, but throughout their tenure at the college. We did not find effects generally for especially fall-to-fall persistence. And one thing that we found as well in both studies, that it's important not just to help students coming in develop plans, which students love, we know from other research, and students love to have a plan, and generally in community colleges, they haven't had a plan, but it's important to provide follow-through advising, and colleges that have done this have afforded to do this because, as you know, community colleges don't have many resources for advising. They've embedded at least some advisors or counselors in the fields, and they've used technology not only to monitor students' progress, but to schedule students' courses on the students' plan when they need them. But this embedding advisors in the field, and even more so, scheduling based on students' plan, are sort of next frontiers for colleges, so the follow-on. We also found that some colleges made really good improvements to the onboarding of students and helping them plan, but they kept in place prerequisite remediation. We were very focused on math because that's the big sorter, and those colleges did not see improvements. The one final finding is we saw improvements for all groups of students, right? We saw upward trends, but we didn't see a narrowing of the gaps of students by race and other characteristics. So Black students improved, Hispanic students improved, but white and Asian improved in equal measure. We didn't see the gap. So these are kind of pointing to some of the next frontiers.
Lots of additional frontiers, obviously. Where do you think the biggest sort of opportunities are for institutions, and then maybe follow that with a conversation about what the biggest impediments are.
Scheduling based on students' plans. Community colleges still roll over the schedules from last year, which means they've been rolling it over, and the deans of the different academic divisions roll it over without communicating often with one another, or they'll co-schedule courses, essential courses for their programs.
Meaning it's two courses that a student needs are going to be scheduled at the same time or overlapping in some way that causes impediments. Interesting.
This is one of Hannah's big saws, so I'll turn it over to her.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think one of the big things we've learned, I mean, we knew this from the beginning, but this is an incredibly complicated reform. So, you know, it involves really everyone in an institution has to be involved, from the president to the vice presidents, deans, program chairs, faculty, advisors, registrar. And like, I could just go on listing like everyone who works in a community college, and they're in some way gonna, you know, need to be involved in this work. That can be difficult. It's part of what contributes to this, you know, I was saying like this needs, probably takes at least 5 years to do this work. And that doesn't include the several years that most colleges spent really kind of laying the groundwork. So laying the groundwork includes a lot of like colleges looking at their data, learning how to have conversations about their data, looking at how different students are doing within the institution, thinking about the barriers that the college is creating to student success. And all this goes into really helping people kind of think differently about how they're supporting students into and through the college and into and through a program of study. Acknowledging that is really important. And it's also, you have to think about it as a set of kind of interlocking, interconnected, complementary reforms that you're adopting, not just kind of a checklist of practices. You know, when we talk about making educational plans, like I think that's a great goal. How can we help every student make a full program educational plan? It's going to show them the courses that they need to complete their program of study on their timeline. So my timeline is going to be different than Davis's timeline and then someone else's timeline for completion. But then you kind of work back from that. So how are we going to help every student make an educational plan? We're going to have to probably restructure advising, rethink about the student's first year at the institution from onboarding and orientation, first year experience courses, all of these things kind of can support the creation of an educational plan. And then from there, you can think, well, to make an educational plan, we need to have all our programs of study mapped out. So kind of having this default series of courses so we know what a program includes so that then an advisor can work with a student and help them customize that to make an educational plan. So thinking about these as being like interlocking reforms that support each other, I think is really helpful way to think about it from the start.
I mean, you're talking about like really a fully functioning organism where everything is connected. And that's just not how most institutions operate. How does one go about persuading all the people that you mentioned needing to be involved in this, that they need to play on a team like that and sort of think about all these interlocking parts?
Leadership of the college is definitely an important piece of that. Within the AACC Pathways Project, one reason we think we saw some really, you know, promising one-year outcomes is because there was pretty consistent leadership in this group of 30 colleges. Like a lot of the presidents were there throughout the project. And this was a long project. Colleges were recruited in 2015. It kicked off in early 2016. And it continued until 2022. So I think that's a long time to have, you know, the same president there. And in many cases, there was the same person. They also had, in many cases, steady leadership in like a guided pathways lead type of role, which is often like a vice president of student services or a vice president of academic affairs. So I think that really does support the work, because a lot of that, I think, does include looking at data. And more than looking at institution level data, which is important, looking at program level data is also really impactful, because if I'm a faculty member or a dean or program chair in like a business program, it's much more helpful to look at data for my students in business and in the business programs than it is to look at college-wide data, because that just obscures, you know, it evens things out. You're looking at averages, whereas I'm looking now at my data, students who want to be in business, and I'm seeing how many of them persist to the second term, persist to the second year, graduate, transfer, complete a bachelor's degree. That's really helpful. And then the third thing I mentioned that I think helps is state associations, state agencies can be really impactful in terms of bringing together teams from colleges to support this work. So in a lot of states that we've worked with, Ohio and Michigan and Tennessee and Washington and Texas, like the associations, the agencies in those states have convened teams, sometimes teams of 10, 12 people from these colleges together, where they're, you know, they're bringing in people to talk about, you know, the model to help people in the institutions look at their data. In some cases, they're providing data to the colleges. You know, in some cases, I think this can be really, really helpful for some of the small institutions as well, who might not have as many resources to bring in external professional development or technical assistance.
It was interesting to me that you didn't just mention places with systems, but you're talking about some kind of centralizing structure.
I think the associations, they are in a sense like, you know, making the case and providing support to their colleges. Like they can't require colleges to do anything, but, you know, they're bringing the teams together and they're providing the support and kind of creating a structure within which colleges can then make the case to the people within their institutions. So
all the colleges, and this is really important, including the tiny little colleges like Washington State in Ohio, which is in Appalachia, done amazing things with very few resources in Appalachia, increased their post-high school enrollment, which we always look at as very critical. Even in more, quote, centralized states, you can't order colleges to do stuff. You have to persuade them. This is a heavy lift. It's basically redesigning a 60-year-old model, which was, you know, worked fabulously. It was one of the great inventions of, you know, the U.S. in higher education, and there was a lot to be proud of, and access is still important, and these are highly under-resourced institutions. But what I think the reason Guided Pathways was popular, and only two states, Washington and California, provided state funding for Guided Pathways. So in other words, this was things colleges were doing on their own, and a big reason was their enrollment after 2012, as you know, started to tank, especially their post-high school enrollment. The only growing group was dual enrollment. And it continued to the pandemic, and then community colleges were hit, and their students were hit hardest by the pandemic, because community colleges students are disproportionately from working-class families who rely on service jobs that were just decimated. Whether or not you call it Guided Pathways, there's this recognition that to attract and retain students, we have to adopt a new business model. The old business model was we provide low-cost access to college courses, but now you have to provide affordable access to quality programs that lead either to a good job or transfer in a major, not transfer with fullness of credit, and the kinds of supports Hannah was talking on to help students onboard into a program. And leadership of community colleges really, they get this, that it's become even more competitive.
This episode of The Key is sponsored by CourseDog. The processes behind academic operations enable students to successfully access their education. Class and event scheduling, assessment, curriculum and catalog management all impact the student experience. Manage it all in one place with CourseDog's academic operations platform, bi-directionally integrated with your SIS. Maximize your resources to meet students' needs. Visit CourseDog.com/IHE to learn more. CourseDog, higher ed's best friend.
Davis, early on, you mentioned that the students want a plan. I'm interested in whether this focus on students having a clear plan is in any way in opposition to or limiting of the idea of exploration and learners getting exposed to new disciplines or avenues. Is there anything students lose from this very clear sense of what comes next, or is it an unequivocal good?
I think what students want is a sense of what's coming next, how long is this going to take, and just having kind of worked out the details with someone. So if I'm meeting with my advisor, I now have a set of courses. I have a timeline. If I, you know, follow this, I'll be able to graduate in, you know, however long it's supposed to take. But also understanding the plan is going to change. My plan might change because I withdraw from a class, or I decide I want to take some different electives, or I change my major, or I decide to go to a different four-year institution and they happen to require slightly different courses. So having a plan is helpful to students. They seem to like having plans, but the plans are definitely going to change. So in addition to having systems in place to help students develop a full program plan at the outset, having systems in place to then update those plans as needed over time is really important. I think it's not a matter of cutting down on, you know, students' exploration or their choice. I think it's in some ways facilitating more exploration, because now we're building in opportunities for every student. And it's not even opportunities. We are building in these conversations that students are having with advisors, with faculty, with other people at the institution to talk about majors, to talk about careers, to learn about maybe fields that they didn't know about, and to then talk to someone about, you know, what electives you might want to take. I might have an interest in music, and so I want to take, you know, make sure that I'm taking some music courses in my electives. But now when you're having that conversation, you're ensuring that those electives that you want to take, these other classes that you want to explore, are going to count towards, you know, your degree. It's not going to be just additional credits that you're accumulating along the way. In some ways, I think this really does promote more exploration, not less, because right now many students self-advise and, you know, they're not having that conversation with someone. Many students just kind of end up in the default of an AA in liberal arts and sciences or a general studies degree. So now we're saying, let's have those conversations from the start. You know, maybe even before students apply, they're starting to talk with an advisor and faculty members and thinking about what they want to do and building the plan based on those conversations.
Our thinking has evolved. I mean, redesigning and the early guided pathways efforts were really focused, as you know, on the choice architecture. Too many choices, you know, on behavioral, drawing from behavioral economics and psychology, which was hot at the time. But what we've learned from our research on student success is that in community colleges especially, it's not that you're restricting choice, you're providing students with guidance where there was no guidance. The research in particular suggests that information is important. But the research suggests that, in fact, finding a major that's a fit for you is more a developmental learning process. Because guided pathways is so complicated, HANA really led this effort to provide a framework for onboarding of students, because community colleges lose 40% of students overall in the first couple terms and close to 60% of African-American students, Native American students, and their lowest income students. So onboarding is really important, and she and I created this Ask, Connect, Inspire, and Plan. Again, a research-based framework. So you've got to ask the student, what are you interested in? And it can't just be one advising thing. You've got to connect them with people, because networking is very important, as we know, engagement. You've got to provide them with an inspiring learning experience in their first term, and it's got to be, it could be a humanities course, but it's got to be a really well-taught humanities course. And then you have to provide them with a plan, because so many students are wandering, and these are students who can't afford it, but we know that they want it. They're not lacking it.
What is it going to take for more community colleges to, is it more places starting down this path? Is it more of the places that are already doing it, getting better at it? I mean, where do you see the most optimism, Hanna, for sort of this work going forward?
I think both those cases. I think the colleges that have started this work are generally, continuing it. And, you know, when we started this, there was the framework and the model that we had, but we didn't really know, you know, how it was going to work. what exactly it was going to look like. So, you know, we learned a lot from those early years in Tennessee, in the AACC Pathways Project, and in states like Ohio, just seeing how are different colleges going to take this framework and adapt it to their context. Whether, you know, because they're going to be in completely different situations, right? You have, you know, Columbus State Community College in Ohio, and you have Washington State Community College in Ohio, or Zane State in Ohio, three very different colleges who are going to have to take these principles and think about, okay, how are we going to make this work for us? What is this going to look like for us, for our culture, for our students in our, you know, size institution? So I think that, you know, we've learned so much from these colleges that now colleges that are getting started on this work now can benefit from that. So, you know, we have a lot of research and there's just a lot of experience out there from the colleges that were sort of figuring it out along the way early on that can really benefit colleges that are just getting started. So, like, that's why, you know, originally we talked a lot about some of the structural reforms that colleges were doing, like making meta majors or making program maps. Important, yes, but for, you know, right now, you know, where colleges seem to start and what we encourage is, well, let's ensure that we're thinking about the student experience from the beginning. Let's help every student get this educational plan, because that's going to require changing all of these different experiences for them. And so starting there, I think is really, you know, important. For colleges that have been doing it a while and have new leadership, they're also kind of thinking about, okay, how are we going to continue to move this work forward? How are we going to iterate on some of these ideas and improve them over time? They're going to need to adapt and learn from things that they're doing. So I think it's, you know, for colleges that are continuing this work, we'll continue to learn from them. From colleges that are just starting, I think it's a good time to start, because, you know, we know a lot more than we did 7-8 years ago about how you can really kind of get up and running in this work a lot faster and start to see some of those changes in the student experience.
That was Hannah Warr and Davis Jenkins at the Community College Research Center discussing their work both developing and assessing the impact of the Guided Pathways model of community college reform. Thanks to the two of them for their time and their insights today. One of the things our conversation reinforced for me was both how hard it is and how much opportunity there is to try to bring about major changes to institutions that are made up of dozens, if not scores, of loosely connected departments and units. Hannah Warr's long list of all the constituents who have a role to play in bringing about a major institutional transformation like this is daunting. And it's no surprise that it can be hard to get them operating from a common information base and shared understanding of the strategy, let alone rowing in the same direction in carrying it out. Given how many issues in higher education today require the sort of whole college approach that Guided Pathways does, understanding what has worked and not worked with a model like this can hopefully give us some insights into how colleges and universities might attack and overcome the other challenges they're facing. Among other things, I wasn't surprised to hear from our guest today that strength in numbers from groups of colleges working together is part of the solution. That's all for this episode of The Key. Thanks for taking time to join us today. And until next time, stay well and stay safe.